In the leaked Supreme Court draft opinion striking down Roe v. Wade, Justice Samuel Alito writes that the nation has had a, quote, unbroken tradition of criminalizing abortion. But as John Yang reports, the history is actually much more complicated.
For almost a half century, scenes like this have become nearly routine outside women's health clinics around the country.
Don't murder your baby, please. Let us help you.
In the nation's capital, supporters on each side of the abortion divide made their voices heard. But in the country's earliest years, abortion was not against the law.
Indigenous people had been performing all manner of health care, abortions, helping people carry pregnancies to terms. The pilgrims were performing abortions.
Michelle Goodwin is a law professor at the University of California, Irvine.
Abortion becomes a controversial issue that is ripe then for legislative debate close to the time of the Civil War. And it's at a time in which males are getting involved in reproduction. Prior to that time, nearly 100% of women's reproductive health care had all been done by women and had been done by midwives.
Midwives who helped deliver babies also helped women terminate pregnancies. Jennifer Holland is a professor of history at the University of Oklahoma.
And in English common law, abortions were legal before something called quickening, which is when a woman felt a fetus move somewhere between the 4th and 6th month of pregnancy. And all abortions before that were legal, and only after that were they illegal.
Women could find ways to terminate pregnancies in the pages of their newspapers. Ads promoted products with shrewdly disguised names like Dr. Vandenberg's female renovating pills, or services like those Madame Costello provided for ladies who wished to be treated for obstruction of their monthly periods. In New York, Madame Restel was considered a heroine to her patients, but demonized in the press, labeled the abortionist of Fifth Avenue. Her business success spawned copycats in other cities. In 1847, a group of white men formed the American Medical Association. They pushed for laws to make abortion illegal in an effort to put midwives like Madame Restel out of business. The effort to outlaw abortion was also driven by a growing fear of foreign non-white immigration and declining birth rates among white Protestants.
It was deeply racial, tying into the fact that the nation was soon to be at war and that there were tensions that were already building, with abolitionists saying these are horrible things that we see taking place in the antebellum South. And so they connected a racist impact to that too, saying that white women needed to use their loins and go north, south, east, and west because of the potential browning of America.
Between the end of the Civil War in 1910, abortion was banned in all the states except in cases where either the life of the mother or the viability of the fetus was at risk. But abortion was still practiced in secret. Late 19th century observers estimated that each year there were 2 million abortions. And in 1930, one-fifth of recorded maternal deaths were from these unsafe, illegal procedures, often called back-alley abortions. They've been portrayed in popular culture here in the film Dirty Dancing, which was set in 1963.
He didn't use no ether, nothing.
I thought you said he was at real MD.
The guy had a dirty knife and a folding table. I could hear her screaming in the hallway, and I swear to God, Johnny, I tried to get in. I tried.
Attitudes toward abortion began to shift in the 1960s. One example: the highly publicized case of Sherry Chesson Finkbein, the host of a popular children's TV show. She feared her developing fetus was damaged as a result of taking thalidomide for morning sickness. She went to Sweden for an abortion because it was illegal in the United States. At the time, a Gallup poll showed 52% of Americans said she did the right thing.
In the mid-60s, you have this reform movement grow up, and clergy were really outspoken in this particular reform movement. And it's this group of clergy from all different denominations, Jewish, Protestant, and they counseled women about abortion and helped them seek abortions. And not only that, but then the clergy would testify about their actions in, to state legislatures. So they were openly breaking the law.
Another group based in Chicago, the Jane Collective, worked underground to help thousands of women obtain abortions between 1969 and 1973. The push for abortion rights also became more visible, and pressure was on to liberalize abortion laws.
We're here because we were not allowed to testify to this all-male committee who is deciding what should happen to our bodies and our lives.
Hawaii, New York, Alaska, and Washington State were the first to legalize abortion access for women in 1970. Then in January 1973, the Supreme Court announced its landmark decision in Roe v. Wade, legalizing abortion nationwide.
These are justices that are looking at the American landscape and finding that abortions have not stopped. There are people who are discovering women in motel rooms dying or dead on top of sheets and towels. Women being found on kitchen tables having tried to self-manage an abortion because it's been made criminalized.
The Roe v. Wade ruling fueled a movement against abortion. Groups staged marches and sit-ins across the country in protest.
Catholics and evangelicals and also Mormons, they fundamentally disagreed. Not only disagreed about theology, but believed they each of them believed that they had the monopoly on religious truth. But they really are able to link themselves through abortion politics and saying that they are linked by something called Judeo-Christian values, which the anti-abortion movement resuscitates as an idea in the 70s to sort of cover this idea that all Christians, of course, oppose abortion. And they always have. And of course, that was a manufactured idea of this movement because religious people had been very openly supporting abortion and very recently, and they knew that wasn't true. In the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, you have Republicans acknowledge the power of this voting base. The movement has been incredibly good at developing a constituency for whom no other issue matters. Not any other issue matters as much as this issue.
In those same decades, some took their beliefs to an extreme, using violence, including bombings, arsons, and even murders of abortion providers.
That is a real threat that continues to exist, not on the scale that it was, though, in the 1980s. This is now a political movement and not just something that is simply in the streets. There is a kind of political movement that has taken, that has galvanized, picked up steam, and been able to win victories both at the state legislative level and also in American courts.
I think both Donald Trump and these very fervent state legislators who believe very deeply on this issue are really a product of the power of this movement.
It's an issue that's become one of the most divisive of the day. Outside the Supreme Court, protests continue as the country awaits the court's final decision. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm John Yang.